This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We are live at Edgar's Cantina, T-Mobile Park, site of game two of the four-game series with the Cleveland Guardians in town to take on your Seattle Mariners after a tremendous win last night. Looking for a repeat of that coming up. We'll talk to Logan Gilbert later on in the show. What's that? You got to turn it
apparently. Hey, now. Stop point fingers.
There you
Yesterday,
go.
Yesterday, that happened several times over there.
One time, and I put on the wrong headsets.
Well, that's even worse.
We got a table full of headsets. Come on.
I'm just hoping that Logan's not sick of us yet. Because
he can't be.
Well, he agreed to come on. So.
It's impossible. Yeah. Well, he doesn't know what he agreed to. He has no idea.
Who are those?
He's going to walk out here and go, again?
You too.
What do we have to talk about? Nothing's changed since last we spoke. So we'll see. Looking forward to that guy. Hardest working guy on the team, besides Ichiro. Those two work harder than everybody. Ryan Roland-Smith will be with us at 4 o'clock. Katie Griggs, Mariners President of Baseball Operations, will join us on the show as well. So a lot to talk about, a lot to get to. But last night, talked about this place just buzzing. Just the building was shaking. It was vibrant, especially with the Ty France home run. But we saw a pitch clock violation here last night, Dave. And the crowd, in my opinion, was the biggest reason for it. You hear it right here.
The look in by Hrinchek. And now time is called. Did the clock run down? And it did. So we have our first infraction on Hrinchek for taking too long. Time had ran out on the 15-second clock. The count is 1-2 on Crawford.
How about that? You hear the crowd go nuts, and that was another thing I hadn't truly considered. I think it's certainly an advantage in baseball to play at home, but the crowd, I can't think of many times where crowds had an impact on the a moment on the field. Certainly guys get juiced up when the crowd's behind them and everything, but having a direct impact on a moment like that where, you know, Hrinchek seemed out of sorts up there. And then the very next pitch after that, here's what happened.
Here's the pitch way up high, and it sails all the way to the backstop. And the count is even on Crawford at 2 balls and 2 strikes.
Listen how loud that is.
Yeah.
That's like, and I'm thinking, is this going to be a thing now, like the 12s out at Lumen Field where the false starts are, you take pride in causing these false starts when you see players looking at each other, pointing to their helmets, I can't hear, and, you know, maybe the pitcher can't hear the pitch calm on the field, and he's trying to get the catcher to drop the signal with the fingers like the old school, and, you know, it just feels like, you know what, this could now be a thing, a source of pride for Mariner fans, the way the false starts are for the 12s out at Lumen Field.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it does get on top of you, I think, as a player. I mean, you're more used to it in football, obviously. And, yeah, when's the last time? I mean, yeah, it was a big crowd. You talked about you were here for Cal Raleigh's home run that got him into playoffs, you know, the Houston game that went on forever.
18 innings.
Could possibly be something. I got to say that when the crowd gets on top of you, and this is just a football thing, the first time I ever noticed that was my sophomore or junior year in college. We came here to Washington, and it was a day like this where the rain was going sideways, and the crowd, I mean, it like hurt your ears. I'll never forget that. There was a linebacker named Joe Kelly. He was a really good player. I think he got drafted in the first or second round, played for Cincinnati, and he hit one of our receivers, and then grabbed him by the jersey and like picked him up and dragged him and was like put his finger in the air like I'm number one, and he was like high stepping, dragging our receiver.
Who's the receiver doing? Just a sack of potatoes there?
And I'm like, what was that? And then the crowd, you know, got on top of it, and it was just like an assault on your senses. I mean, obviously rain, sideways rain and everything, but the noise, I just remember thinking, like, that hurts.
That's unsportsmanlike conduct right there.
Well, that was definitely a penalty that did not get called.
In that moment when the crowd was hurting your ears, did you think, I should have gone to UW?
I had a chance. They made one too many jokes about Stanford when I was on my trip here.
Oh, really?
Because my brother played at Stanford.
Oh.
And at the time. And so I was trying to be objective. And
they were taking shots at, yeah. at the academic prowess of that school?
Yeah, something about that. Something like that. So, but no, I wanted to go play with my brother. That was going to happen either way. Gary Pinkel was my the guy who recruited me. But no, that I mean, look, that was an example and kind of the first time where I ever remember anything like that that it actually affected you. And I think in baseball, I just maybe people aren't. Some of these teams around the, you know, around the Major League Baseball, they haven't been exposed to the Seattle crazy fans here, man. I mean,
and how much pride they take in feeling like we had an impact.
Right.
We had an impact. Exactly. I mean, the volume wars between Kansas City and Seattle have been going on for years. And you know, who's the louder? They measure, you know, the decibel levels. Well, now Seattle has the record. Well, now KC has the record. And the back and forth and the amount of pride that this city takes in being loud and being disruptive and really disruptive to the opponent. And now there's an opportunity because think about it. The pitchers out there, the majority, if not all, are using pitch comm. They're that loud. They can't hear. So now they're trying to signal to the catcher to, you know, all right, give me the old school. Give me the fingers down there. We got to get in. Meanwhile, the pitch clock is rolling while they're trying to get that going. And you saw the impact last night. I could see this becoming the thing, just that's like the 12s right out there.
Yeah. And what is it about this region that people, I don't know, you just don't really, Kansas City was pretty bad. Kansas City is one of the more, you know, louder stadiums, but it's not really that big of a thing in baseball, right?
Not generally. You don't really hear.
But you know what? Now that the speed, you know, that you've sped up the game, it's more like a football game. Like,
yeah.
You come to a baseball
clock.
Game. Huh?
Just like a play clock, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you came to a game last year, a couple of games, and, you know, you have a chance to sit and talk to the guy next to you and make comments and go grab a beer. Now it's kind of sped up like football, and so you're kind of creating that atmosphere and that urgency. And then, yeah, I mean, if the fans decide they want to get on top of it, you know, I think Bump and Stacy were talking about maybe, you know, people doing the countdown thing, mm-hmm. you know, 10, 9, you know, for the away team, maybe get on top of them that way. It could become a thing. So, yeah.
I think it can. I think it's going to catch on. Are we going to call them the 10s?
Yes.
Is that what they're going to be, the
10s? Let's do that, Bob. And you know what? We're going to get them going this show right here.
The 10s.
We're going to, just like you guys claim to be the Legion of Boom.
It's not claim. It's a fact.
You and Gross?
It's an absolute and utter fact. But, yeah, we'll start the 10s here. They are going to start impact because you think about it, you know, you just go back a few years ago before pitch comm, before a pitch clock. Yeah, it's handsome, you know, crowd wouldn't, I'm not saying it didn't rattle a pitcher here or there, certainly if momentum was going the other way, but having a direct impact when you've got a deadline, you're looking at a digital deadline and it's ticking down and you can't hear, that's how you're communicating now. You've got a little speaker in your hat and all of a sudden the crowd is so loud you can't hear. There's a panic moment there, like, hey, put the fingers down or whatever. And you saw it last night, and Scott Servais after the game talked about the crowd changing the game.
The crowd changed the game. It really did. It got loud. You know, it got to the pitcher a little bit, and it certainly made a difference in the game. So, great turnout tonight. Awesome support. Obviously, there's a lot of buzz around town about the expectations and what we hope to do this season, and can't get off on a much better start than we did tonight. So,
I remember. I feel like it was the New York Giant game in 2005 when that really became a thing. I'm not sure if that's when they started keeping track as far as offside penalties, but I do remember
they missed a bunch of field goals in that game too.
Yeah, that was where the kicker, who's now a sideline reporter, he missed like two or three.
Yeah.
It was in the, I think it was in the north end zone, but yeah, that's where, you know, that became, you know, people took pride in that, and it was a huge, because look, you're going on, you know, in football, now you put the offense and the defense on the same level, and typically, and especially on the lines, because the offense has the advantage because they know the snap count. You can't hear the snap count. You're both going on motion. D linemen are quicker, you know, and so that's why that became a thing there. But, you know, I don't know. Would there be some kind of provision that if you can't use the, you
pitch,
know, the
pitch comm
thing, then...
Then you go old school with just putting the fingers down.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go back to that, I guess.
But you still have the clock to deal with.
Yeah.
So, I'm certain after last night that they're in there probably going, all right, man, if we get into this again, just immediately go down to,
right,
you know, Here's what we're calling. Here's what we're going to do. We're going right to the hand. I'll give you a signal. We got to get it going. But the deadline is the unique thing, the digital deadline up there. So that's a new element that really creates a sense of pressure and hey, we got to hurry up. We got to get this going. One more from Scott Service, just talking about the impact the crowd had last night.
It did affect the game, man. It really did. And I thought, their pitcher, we've seen Karinchak a lot in the past. He has a routine, a very lengthy routine. He's had to try to make adjustments with that. You know, the things he does with the ball flipping and everything else. And he was a little bit out of whack. But a credit to our crowd. They got loud. They made it hard for him to focus and concentrate. And that's truly the impact home field advantage can make, you know, in our game. So, again, hats off. Made a huge difference in the ballgame today.
I love it, man. Service is doing exactly what he should do. I could hear Pete Carroll saying that same thing. He does the same thing, gets those people going. You feel like you have a little bit more of a influence on the game. It's not you're there supporting your team. It's that you actually can affect the game. I mean, that's, I think, a huge point of pride. And for whatever reason in this region, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a sense of defiance or something, but I love that about people in Seattle. Like, it's a point of pride that they're going to be the loudest and they're going to, they're going to make their mark on the game. And it happens in football. Why not baseball, especially with the things that are going on now with the pitch clock?
I think it is a point of feeling like, hey, we're tucked up here in the corner and people don't pay attention to Washington and, the whole Southeast Alaska reference and all that stuff. And I think there is that, you know what? We'll show you. Yeah. We'll show you. You want to act like we're this little engine that could type of thing, and we're not a real franchise.
Oh,
and
you're a don't cute paint. Little team.
Yeah, like you're going to pat you on the head. That's adorable. You have a team. Good for you. You know, I think there is a sense of, okay, yeah, we're not L.A., we're not New York, but you're going to feel it. You're going to know that it's the real deal out here. So I think there is pride in being viewed as something less than the big market. And even though Seattle's, number 11 market, number 12 market, something like that. So it is a big market. It's not New York or L.A., Philadelphia, Chicago, but I think there is but we're on par. We're not less than. And I think that comes out of volume.
The tens kind of sounds cool. I like that.
The tens. We running with the tens out here. You got the 12s for the Seahawks. This will be the tens. Let's do that. Let's roll the tens out there. This building will be going nuts. If they get in a position where, the pitcher's behind in the count and, Julio's up or Ty France, anybody's up and it's a consequential situation, I think the tens are going to start going nuts. We're just going to roll with that.
Are we going to lay claim to that bomb like you and
Yes.
Ross did?
Yeah. Yeah, because it'll be a point of fact, Dave. It'll be an absolute fact. It's happening right here.
Wait, you claim that you were talking to Richard?
Shut up. It actually came from one of our listeners. Groz and I didn't create it.
Right.
We were soliciting a name because we were talking about all the cool names for these defenses back in the fearsome foursome and the steel curtain, all these cool names. Like, what should it be for the Seahawks? And a bunch of people texted in ideas, and one of them was the Legion of Boom. And then we ran it by Sherman when he came by for an interview. And so he's like, I like that. And the next day at training camp, all the fans were up there on the berm. Somebody had a handwritten sign that said Legion of Boom, and Groz and I were like, you see that? That's pretty cool. Somebody was listening, they made a sign, and then boom, it blows up, and everybody would tweet us when somebody on TV would mention the name, and it slowly built and became a thing. But, we didn't create it. It just happened on our show. One of the listeners created it.
I remember when I thought that I created the phrase matchup nightmare.
I love those moments. I thought I created punchable face, but
that was already a thing.
Huh? I thought that was mine. But
and then somebody comes along and says, "Yeah, well, I was saying that when I was a little kid."
Yeah, okay. I hadn't heard it.
All right, okay.
But the tens, I hadn't heard anybody say that.
I haven't either.
That's happened right here.
You heard it.
It's right here. The tens.
Bob Stelton claims to have started it.
Now
the tens.
Now we brought this up earlier. The game last night, 2 hours 14 minutes. That's faster than the average in spring training. Those were, a little under 2.5 in spring training, 226, I think. So 2 hours, 14 minutes. Now, it was a pitcher's duel. There was not a lot of traffic on the base paths. There were not a lot of hits happening. So when you got that going, it's a lot of three up, three down kind of moments. But as we said, and I'm curious from our listeners out there, whether you were watching on TV or you were at the game, did it feel that fast to you? Because here in person, it honestly did not. And I went back home and watched some different highlights. It was hard to see what was happening here walking through the stands and stuff. But I honestly didn't feel that much of a difference personally just being here. Curious what others thought, whether you were here or at home watching on TV. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. But it was cool. I mean, definitely a cool thing.
I just going through my, looking at Major League Baseball and the network. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. Like in 1928, the average time of a nine-inning game was 2 hours and 51 minutes in 1928. It's probably because they had one baseball.
Yeah, they had to go back and get it when it was a foul ball. Could you throw that back in?
Yeah. Then 1941 was like just a little over 2 hours, but 1984, 2.5 hours. So, I mean, like I said, it's what I'm starting to see is that it's about, I always felt the guys that, you know, redid their gloves, that they were being selfish with everybody's time. Like, to JP's point about waiting, you know, I think that's, I don't want to wait for that. I mean, I guess the thing I didn't like was that it's kind of a casual, like I always say, it's a great date. It's not a great date to take somebody to a football game because it's loud. You know, if you're at Husky Stadium and they're doing the wave, there's not a lot of chance to talk. You know, like you take a date to a movie and it's like you don't really get to know them. You sit next to them and watch a movie. But, you know, so baseball was more that way, but it wasn't, you know, I didn't realize how much it was just silly things happening, you know, like a guy going, oh, you know what? I'm just going to try to mess with this guy's mind by calling a timeout and stepping out. It's just
keep throwing to first base if a runner's over there.
Just ridiculous. I mean, you know, and we saw over the last few years, I don't know if it got more intense, but people like to boo when the pitcher throws it over to first base. But
yeah, that's immediate. it used to be if they threw it too many times, they'd slowly the boos would build. Now it's the very first pickoff attempt. Boo!
Yeah.
Like, how dare you?
And then Dave Sims says, calm down, people.
Yeah,
I love that. I love when he does that. But, you know, Major League Baseball Network had a little stat on that they were 30 minutes shorter than last year's opening day games. And the other thing, 14 violations of the pitch clock, as I read in the update, and then twice as many stolen base attempts. So, you know, that part of it, I think, is exciting. I like the throw down to second and watching the replay. Did he get him? You know, that to me is very cool. And I think I would, if I was a skipper of a team, Bob, I would probably have Cody Barton playing catcher. And I would be a running type of
You have Cody
coach.
Barton playing catcher. You bring him out of the football world and bring him into the baseball world as your catcher.
Well, but, you know, I think I would be aggressive. I mean, force them to make a perfect throw and a tag. I just think that's a lot more difficult. Now you've got, you know, and I think the biggest effect is going to be the, you know, the only the two throws over to first. And then you take a huge lead and, you know, it could work out if you're aggressive. And I feel like I would be one of those guys. So we'll see how that happens. And, you know, if we see, because this is a running team, Cleveland, they had, what, five guys with almost 20. I think they averaged about 20 stolen bases last year.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun, man. It's I love the speed of it. I love the impact of it. And we got the note here on the show sheet that the Phillies, who gave up 9 runs in the fourth inning because things got out of control, said the pitch clock pressure of it got to them. Mm. It got to them, which is
what were they doing during spring training?
Well, I was just going to say that. That's a kind of an odd thing to say because you had a few weeks, a month to get used to it. You know, it wasn't a new, like, it was unveiled yesterday, and you're like, what is this contraption? What is this digital thing up there? What?
Yeah.
So that's to say something like that tells me you didn't do a great job preparing in spring. We're going to have to let Michael Bradley know about that next time we speak to him.
Yeah, you should text El Hombre. Just poke the bear a little bit there. What's going on? Of course, he would be the biggest probably complainer.
Yeah, they're idiots. What were they doing at spring training? Yeah, he'd be laying into them more than anybody.
Yeah,
I mean, because that's not really – I get you're going to have violations here and there, but to say, hey, the pressure of it got to us and things got out of control.
You knew it was coming.
Yeah, there's no excuse for that.
No.
That's on the manager. That's on your pitching coach. That's on whoever – you know, I don't know if it was the hitters or pitchers, but, you know, just whoever was struggling with it, that's on your coaches there.
How many spring training games were there? for the Mariners?
I don't know. What
it's, in the 20s, right?
Yeah.
Early, low 20s?
Yeah, I think was it like 28 or 20, 30? I don't know.
I feel like you should have that worked out by then.
Yeah, you've got more than enough time to address any changes like that. They were able to work with the pickoff moves and able to work with, you know, and it was made such a big deal of. There's nobody who didn't pay attention to it and think, oh, we're going to have to adjust to this. So, yeah, I don't know what happened to that game. A lot of runs were scored in it. I don't know if that's just an excuse, like, oh, it wasn't so much that our pitching stunk out there. It was that the clock got to them. It screwed up their rhythm. Mm-hmm. And the guy last night, you know, watching Cleveland, and he was talking about their reliever. He does have a routine. You see, he'd have the ball in his hand. He'd kind of flipping it up in the air, catching it. Like, that's his thing, I guess. You know?
Yeah, I noticed that, too. And I'm like, I wonder. You know, by the way, I noticed Seawald still's doing that. He can still get the arm thing in.
Just doing it quicker.
His arm thrust, yeah.
Yeah, just doing it all quicker. So if you're going to. You know, if you're a guy who's got to toss the ball up and down three or four times, maybe it's an OCD thing. It's got to do it at least three or four times, whatever the number is.
They should do that for golf, too, by the way. I don't know if you're much of a golfer. I'm really not. But the time, you know, where you get the guy that does, like, the five-minute practice swing and then standing over it and then taking the – and then going back again, like, they should do that for golf, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think Sergio used to take a long time and people got frustrated with him.
Get a swing clock.
Yeah, well, they do have penalties in golf, I think, if you
slow play.
But, yeah, those are pros, and there's a lot of money on the line. When you're out there just hacking it around a, you know, municipal court, and some guy's up there addressing the ball, stepping back, and then he shanks it into the wood. You're like, dude, what are you doing? None of that did any good. Just rock and fire. Get up there. All right. Coming up, the greatest pitch in Major League Baseball history caused what might have been the greatest strikeout in MLB history. We'll talk about Matt Brash's outing coming up next as we continue live from Edgar's Cantina at T-Mobile Park. It is Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We are live at Edgar's Cantina. Look at him throwing the football out there, Dave. You see that? Left field. There's Logan Gilbert out there. He didn't throw it, but somebody else is throwing it. Maybe he'll show you his spiral. We'll ask him when he gets out here about his spiral.
You know what? That's been going on for years. I wonder if that's like a tradition.
Oh, there he goes. I think he picked up a football. Does he have one there?
That's a pretty good. That's a smooth stroke right there.
That's not him, though.
It's not?
No, he's the one that's up against the fence with his back to us.
I can't see him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be over here. We'll ask him about his... Yeah, he probably thinks he can sling it.
He probably thinks so.
I'll show him otherwise.
I think he's right. I think he can sling it.
Who do you think can throw a better pass, me or Logan Gilbert? What do you think,
Bob? I've never seen you throw a football. I've only seen you throw a snowball. So
that's right, out in the parking lot.
Yeah, out in the parking lot. You were very proud of your snowball accuracy, your command of the snowball, the movement you get on it.
I'm the George Kirby of snowball throws.
Well, you should be command. The Matt Brash of that. You'll get people falling down trying to avoid the snowball that actually doesn't come anywhere near them.
Oh my God.
Much like we saw Jose Ramirez, one of the great hitters in this game last night, was absolutely fooled, to say the very least, in a swing that kind of went down to his knee and onto his back.
Oh, my God.
I want to hear this because I saw it, but I didn't hear the play-by-play on it. Here's Brash going up against Jose Ramirez.
Here's the payoff. Swing and a miss, and he corkscrews Jose Ramirez into the earth. He's all the way down to the core. Ramirez does a full 360, breaks an ankle, maybe two, and Brash has gotten a couple of just outlandish swings and misses against these Guardians hitters.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Goldie, you know what? Don't tell him. I hope he's not listening, but that was even better than I expected from Goldie. A corkscrew to the core of the earth.
Into the earth, broken ankle, maybe two.
That's what it looked like. It was ridiculous. And, you know, like you said, it's not like Jose Ramirez is some crappy bush leaguer.
No, he's one of the great players in the game.
I couldn't believe that. And then, you know, that one of his sliders that he threw, it goes like 90% of the way there, straight down the pipe, and then just turns left. How does he do that? It's and then, you know, the one after the corkscrew pitch, his next pitch was 99.
Yeah. He's ridiculous.
Yeah, it
I don't know what sorcery he's using there, but it's fun to watch. And that was quite a moment there to see him on his back like a turtle. Like, he just swung so hard, again, into the earth, to the core.
We might have to hear that again. But you know, like I was talking about him before we went down to spring training, that's kind of what, like, that was better than what I thought it would be. Like, when, yeah, we're talking about, okay, in Major League Baseball history, this is the biggest break on a slider. And I'm like, okay, well, it's probably exaggerated. That was crazy. I think it's
that, you know, crazy middle finger.
Yeah, well, and we were talking about all the hype and everything. Like, come on, that can't be. That was it, man.
It was.
I don't know if you noticed that. Are you watching MLB Network or whatever? That's the one thing I put on MLB Central with Mark DeRosa and Roflo, and, you know, their little fancy nicknames. They do a great job. It's a really good show. But I wonder if that got out, like, nationally. Did anybody see that? Because that was...
It had to have.
I mean, you heard what Goldie said. I mean, that was he was pretty blown away. I'm not, you know, he was surprised. He didn't know that was coming. Maybe he thought at one point he would do that, and he had that call ready to go. But
can we hear that call again? Let's hear that again.
Here's the payoff. Swing and a miss, and he corkscrews Jose Ramirez into the earth. He's all the way down to the core. Ramirez does a full 360, breaks an ankle, maybe two, and Brash has gotten a couple of just outlandish swings and misses against these Guardians hitters.
Into the core.
Corkscrews him into the earth.
Yeah, that, you know, and then, like I said, the 99-mile-per-hour fastball that follows that up. I mean, what in the world? I don't know how. Is there any way you can prepare for that? So I can't wait to see how this gets out there.
Yeah.
You know, like the rest of Major League Baseball starts to see, you know, what's going on there with this guy. It's pretty remarkable.
Well, here's Cal Raleigh just talking about the nastiness of Matt Brash.
Well, his stuff was moving a lot tonight. I tell you, all of our guys' stuff was moving a lot. So it was, he was nasty, straight up nasty. And to get a hitter like that, top five hitter in the league, to do that is tough to do.
That's about as excited as you hear Cal Raleigh right there.
Yeah.
That's got to be pretty cool as a catcher to see a pitch moving like that. No, you call it. You're hoping it's going to break that way. Obviously, you don't expect the hitter to corkscrew himself into the earth to the core, Dave. But yeah. It is pretty cool to be back there and probably see the movement of that pitch and just know this guy's got no shot.
Yeah, well, you're right about Cal. I mean, we've seen him interviewed or heard him interviewed after some pretty big moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've not heard him that excited. So, you know, I'm thinking for him, what kind of a challenge is that for the catcher?
Well, he knows where it's going.
Right. But still, I mean, that thing is breaking. Like, I would just wonder if the first couple he, like, underestimated it and was like, oh.
Yeah, man, I bet working together, they probably had to get used to it. Sort of like when you see knuckleballers out there, you don't appreciate it unless you're there in person. TV, you're going, why is this catcher having such a hard time? Because this thing just looks like it's kind of fluttering up there slowly, and you see him at the last second missing the ball. And now you realize, as I got older, I didn't realize catchers would use a bigger mitt when they're facing, when they're catching a knuckleballer out there, and just how tough it was for them to figure out where the ball's going. But yeah, I think in this case, he's got a pretty good sense of what's happening out there. Very satisfying to see. You know, that kind of result.
Well, and so far, I mean, the three guys we saw from the bullpen, we were talking about how that's always different every year, how it's going to play out and develop, and saw Munoz, which, did he get the save, or was it Sewald? I thought it was,
I have to look. Munoz got himself in a little bit of trouble there and then got himself out of it, but I'll have to look at the box score to see
I mean, just seeing those three, yeah, Munoz got the save.
Okay.
So, those three guys, and we'll see what else comes out of the bullpen, but pretty solid right there. Each of those guys pitching an inning, and, you know, whether they get three strikeouts, I think, and a couple hits. Munoz gave up a couple of hits, but, you know, there was 10 strikes of the 15 pitches that he threw. Sewald threw 12 pitches, 10 strikes. So, yeah, it was but, you know, Brash is 18 pitches, 10 strikes. It's going to be wild a little bit with him, I think. But, man, if he can get some command of what he's doing. But if you have something that's that nasty, I don't know how you, because I mean, if you're planning on that thing breaking back into the strike zone, there might have to be a couple where he might be beaning some people.
I think you just go up there with a tennis racket or some big shovel or something with a big wide end on it, and hope that you get a piece of it. Because yeah, it's just when he's on it, it almost looks unfair. Hey, in memory of our friend John Clayton and in support of his wife, Pat, Seattle Sports is honored to take part in the 2023 Walk MS Seattle on Sunday, April 23rd at Gasworks Park. You can join our team or you can donate to the great cause by visiting seattlesports.com/events and just click on the Walk MS link. So all of that in honor of our friend John Clayton and in support of his wife, Pat. Again, that is the 23rd. Of April at Gasworks Park. So again, you can be part of our team or just donate. Seattlesports.com/events. Click the Walk MS link. Coming up, umpires are the stars of our Y-Man of the Week. We continue live from Edgar's Cantina. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Why, man? Why?
Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
He's a habitual line stepper.
What were you thinking? What are you doing?
Why are you the way that you are?
It's the Why Man of the Week.
We do it every week here with Wyman and Bob. We are live at Edgar's Cantina at T-Mobile Park, site of your Seattle Mariners matchup with the Cleveland Guardians. It's a celebrity version of Why Man. It's a birthday version. As the owner, as we call him now, the chairman of the board, him and Sinatra, the one, the only John Stanton back with us paying a visit in honor of your birthday. That's the only reason he knew it was your birthday. He said, I want to come down and say happy birthday to Dave Wyman, who turns 49 today.
Ooh, nice. Just took a decade off my life.
Oh, we got it. There we go.
You don't want me to sing, do you?
Oh, please no.
We've got birthday donuts here in front of you. John, he's trying to abstain. He's trying not to eat one, but we won't tell anybody.
you got to be the tallest owner in Major League Baseball. Am I right?
I actually, of the guys who sit around the owner's table, I probably am.
Yeah.
Is it Grant Fiesel or Greg Fiesel?
Greg Fiesel,
Grant's brother,
right?
Is the president of the Rockies, and he's the biggest guy in the room anytime he's there.
Okay.
So of the owners themselves. You know, I was once 6'4". I don't think I am anymore, but you know, I'm tall enough to be in the back row of the photos.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah, that's what I thought.
How much fun did you have yesterday?
Oh, what a special, special day here. I mean, from, you know, everything from, you know, the opening of the new clubs, you know, I love the kids running onto the field and the Make-A-Wish kid running around the bases.
He was the cutest kid, too, man. That was awesome.
You know, seeing the first pitches, Marshawn, clearly an athlete, but not necessarily a pitcher.
It's amazing how often that happens when we see NBA players throw out first pitches. Right. It's like they've never had a ball in their hand before.
Although the others all had no problem doing it. Marshawn seemed to be in the bottom quintile of the group. And obviously the game was extraordinary. The thing that shocked me was the enthusiasm on the countdown of the pitch clock. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually sent a note to my colleagues at Major League Baseball today because, you know, we hadn't seen that in all the spring training games, in all of the trials that we'd done in the independent leagues on pitch clock. I'm not aware of ever having the entire 47,000 fan group starting to count down the pitch clock. And poor, I think it's pronounced Crookshank, but the poor pitcher for...
not poor pitcher.
Okay, fine.
He's fine.
Well, he was a poor pitcher in that inning. But the pitcher for Cleveland just completely lost his focus. You know, he threw a ball. It almost looked like he was throwing it at the fans.
Yeah.
It was at least 5 feet over the catcher's head. He hits Wong, and he sets up France, you know, with two runners on to hit that home run. And, you know, what an extraordinary win for us. You know, you look at, you know, a lot of the prognosticators expected us to get beat because Bieber's such a great pitcher. you know, Cleveland does look an awful lot like us as a team. But, you know, the enthusiasm for, you know, being here, the fact that the game was 2 hours and 14 minutes and fans didn't, you know, leave.
Yeah.
Now we're trying to figure out how to make sure we get a more efficient people, get people more efficiently out of our parking lot, because if everyone stays to the end of the game,
right,
you know, it becomes a challenge. So, you know, nice problems to have.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, we'll start next week. We'll start with 6:40 starts. So a 2 hour and 14 minute game means that you can be home by 9 o'clock if you live close by.
Yeah, it was, we were talking about it earlier, then you've heard loud crowds in state. We've heard them here. I mean, but I don't know that I've ever seen a crowd have a direct impact on a moment in a game like that. And that's the beauty of the new, there's a time limit. There's a digital time limit up there, and now they can't hear pitch comm, and now it's a panic situation. It feels like this could become a thing like the 12s over at Lumen Field with the fall starts. We're calling these the 10s. These are the 10s out here.
I haven't heard that before. That's a good
one. That's because we created it.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. You should make sure you get the intellectual property rights on
Bob's
it.
Being generous. I just stood here, and Bob called them the 10s. But I just had somebody that's coming to the game, an attorney friend of mine, said I'm coming to be a 10. So it's catching on, apparently. But it's cool. I mean, we were also, you would know this, like in this area, we were talking about how there's kind of a defiance or a chip on your shoulder about how, and when you know, there's a crowd and you can affect the game. Like, people take pride in that here in this region.
Yeah, I think that's right.
What is that about? Is it a chip on their shoulder?
I wouldn't describe it as that. I think there's a certain amount of independence that people in the
there
Northwest have.
That's a better word.
They have their own, you know, desire to have an impact.
And, yeah.
You know, it manifests itself in all the great businesses that have been started that have national impact that are here. And, you know, you certainly have had artists and other creative folks that have made a huge difference, particularly in music. I think there is a culture associated with the Northwest that is, you know, both independent and, you know, has a little bit of streak of, you know, being confident.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking about just saying, I don't think anybody out here likes to be viewed as less than the big cities, the LA, the New York, the Chicago, Philadelphia. Like, okay, yeah, you feel like we're tucked up here. We're going to show you.
Right.
We're going to show you what an impact, what a sports town this truly is, because it's always about the big markets and they dominate. I think there is that we're going to show you attitude, and they do. I mean, the Seahawks are always amongst the loudest stadiums in football, competing with Kansas City, and I think last night started something. I really do. When they saw they had an impact on that pitcher out there, and that he can't hear pitch comm, and he's looking at the clock, that's a different set of dynamics, and now they're part of it.
Well, and it goes to one of the things we learned in the rules process was that late inning pitchers, the relief pitchers, particularly in the eighth and ninth, tend to be more deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the average times, I think, in the ninth inning were 28.9 seconds for between pitches with no runners on, you know, compared to the 15-second limit. That number was about 18 seconds in the first and second inning. So, you know, the degree of preparation and maybe the degree of fiddling with your glove and things like that they do, and you know the tactical efforts to get their arms loosened up so they can throw a max effort pitch, all those things I think contributed to having late inning pitchers take more time, and now they're under more pressure because of the pitch clock.
Hey, what one thing we touched on briefly, I don't know if you saw it last night, that I never even considered with the new rules, we saw with the Mets. Did you see what happened with Pete Alonso? He was on first base, and apparently there was a foul ball. He had run to second, and then he took his time getting back to first base. And they called a strike on his teammate at the plate, and everybody was looking around going, what's going on? Nobody could figure. The announcers were trying to figure their way through. I hadn't even considered the guy on first and him taking a certain amount of time to get back and it being punitive to the guy up at the plate.
Yeah, I did not see that play. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, technically, the batter has to be ready with 8 seconds remaining on the clock. So, you know, if the batter was trying to give Alonso more time, then Alonso may have been the cause, but the infraction was levied against the batter himself. So, you know, I think that we're all getting used to the new rules. The number of violations was relatively small last night. It's, you know, there will be a game in which the infraction makes a big difference in the outcome of the game. I wouldn't put what happened to us in the eighth last night as that. That I agree with you. It's the crowd. You know, clearly the pitch, I think it was an 0-2 count that the violation was on Kirkshank. You know, he had a 1-2 count, right? Mm-hmm. He still could have thrown a pitch in the dirt and tried to get a swing and then taken two to try to get him out. But, you know, he lost his concentration apparently, and that's I think what made a difference. But I think we're going to learn a lot.
Yeah.
That you see foul ball plays, you know, and I thought that the timer did a good job of not restarting the clock
immediately
until, you know, the players were able to, you know, the defensive players were back in the field to play back near their positions, so that you didn't have a situation, you know, I guess it's the corollary to the situation you've got where a left fielder's out of position and as a result the pitcher gets an infraction.
Chairman of the board, bonus edition. How about that?
Go. I think celebrity edition.
You should join us every day. How about that?
There we go.
You can speak. You work with the tens. Let's get the tens thing going. I think it's going
to
be a thing.
I don't think you can seem to lower the average quality of the broadcast that much. So, but thank you very much. And you know, I've said this to you for the last several years. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming out to T-Mobile Park. I think we've got a net high enough that you're not going to get hit by foul balls now.
You would though.
Yeah, you're in the danger zone.
I guess I am.
Thanks for coming on, man.
It's a lot of fun. Thank you, guys.
We appreciate it. John Stanton with us. Once again, always fun to talk to him. By the way, Y-Man is presented by Mazda of Everett. Coming up, he's going to be the best-dressed guy on the set. Ryan Roland-Smith will join us next here live from Edgar's Cantina. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.